This episode is brought to you by Adobe. Design at the speed of thought with Adobe XD, the first all-in-one UX UI solution for designing, sharing, and prototyping experiences. Try the free beta today. Go to userdefenders.com/XD to learn more.
Welcome to the User Defenders podcast, where we interview UX superheroes who fight for the users in order to inspire and equip you to do the same. And now, here's your host, Jason Ogle.
Greetings, User Defenders. Welcome to episode 38. Today, I got to interview inspirational designer, freelancer, fellow podcaster, writer, aspiring coder, heck, what doesn't she do, Femke. No last name needed. In fact, if I tried, I'd probably butcher it. Femke and I talk a lot about personal growth, her viral crappy work article, and why we need more crappy work, getting stuff done, and so much more. Femke is one of those rare gems that you can't help but be inspired and motivated just by listening to her. Never one to hold up your personal growth, I'll get right to my inspiring interview with Femke. Femke is a designer, writer, and podcaster currently working at Atomic, an online prototyping tool for teams. In her podcast, Design Life, she talks about design and side projects for motivated creators. When she's not talking about design, she's writing weekly about creative self-help for her newsletter. She also played classical violin for 15 years. Welcome to User Defenders, Femke. I'm super excited to have you on the show today.
Hey, I'm very excited to be here. So thank you so much for inviting me on. It's super cool to be here.
Oh, it's an honor to have you. And I said your podcast, but I know you co-host the podcast with Charlie, right?
Yes, I co-host the podcast with a friend of mine, Charlie Prangley, and we started it about a year and a half ago. So I think you started this podcast probably around the same time, I guess, right?
I think we started at the same time. That's wild.
Yeah. So we've been doing it for about a year and a half, weekly episodes. It's called Design Life. And oh my gosh, I've just learned so much since podcasting. I'm sure you're the same. It's just been such a journey and super fun to be able to build this community of really motivated creators that tune in every week to listen to our show. Still like a year and a half blows my mind. It's super, super cool.
Oh, man. Well, I want to definitely talk more about the podcast, but I want to start the show by you taking a few moments to give us a look into your personal life. Like, what kind of things do you like to do when you're not working? And I know that's an interesting question because you seem to always be working on something and you keep yourself busy, but you certainly are always bettering yourself as well, which I love. So I'd love to take a moment just to get to know you a little more, especially for our defenders listening.
Yeah, sure. So I currently work at atomic.io, which is a prototyping tool, and I work there full time. That's my day job. And then on the side, I have quite a lot of side projects going on. I really like to keep busy, and I like to take side projects as an opportunity to kind of challenge myself and push myself and challenge myself to learn new things, I guess, go beyond what I just do in my day job and give myself that opportunity to explore other things. So I do quite a lot of side projects like my podcast, which we just touched on. Mm-hmm. And I also do quite a bit of writing. So
yes.
Writing is something that I started doing almost 2 years ago, I think now. And it's just been really cool to, not only for me personally to be able to get my feelings and thoughts out, but also to help others who are really struggling with something. And that's been a really nice way to sort of build an audience and talk to these people who are, you know, experiencing maybe similar struggles to I am. And yeah, it's just been a really nice way to connect with those people. So I write weekly for my newsletter, which has been super fun. And on the side of that, I also interview creatives. So I sort of started feeling like there was a lot of the spotlight being shined on those like hotshot creatives who are at their career peak, mm-hmm. you know, like the mainstream super famous designers. And I felt like there was a bit of a gap there for younger or more underrepresented designers and creatives that were also doing really cool things and really valuable things, mm-hmm. but weren't necessarily being heard as much. So I have an interview series called the Creative Series where I interview those sort of underrepresented designers and creatives, which is really, really fun to get to hear about the kind of projects that they're working on.
I love that.
Yeah, it's been really, really fun. And I've met a lot of new people through that as well, which has been super cool. And I guess all of those things sort of fall under the branch of work. And when I'm not doing those things, which, I mean, I admit I spend a lot of my time doing those things, but when I'm not doing that, usually I'm either traveling. So I just recently moved to Europe almost 2 years ago from a little place down under called New Zealand.
Oh, yes. Which
is where my crazy accent is from.
Love
I'm sure
it.
People are listening being like, what is that wacko accent that she has?
It's not Australia. It's New Zealand.
Not Australia. Yeah. So I moved from New Zealand to Europe a couple of years ago. And so since then, I am just making the most of being able to travel in the weekends whenever I can. Like the fact that I can get on a plane and be in Paris in an hour is ridiculous in my mind. So that's been super cool. And I'm also actually at the moment learning how to code. So that's been something that I've been doing in my spare time that I've surprised myself actually by really enjoying it and really sticking to it consistently. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, that's been a really good challenge for me. It's been a lot of fun.
What language are you learning right now and why?
I'm currently doing a mix of HTML, CSS, and JavaScript.
Nice.
So starting with the basics. Yeah, the big three. So really starting with baby steps. I mean, my goal at the moment is just to be able to build my own website. So if I can get there, I will be pretty pleased with myself.
That's awesome. And we talk a lot about on the show about should designers, and it's certainly an ongoing conversation. I'm sure you've written about it as well. And I think actually you have. I think I read something recently from you about it and you talking about your journey into learning code. And I think it's one of those things where it can't hurt and it can only help, especially as we kind of enter this age of sort of needing to know a little bit of everything. I'm still a big believer in specializing, and I'll preach that to the defenders listening all the time. Like it's good to know a lot of things, and that comes with experience and also putting yourself out there. But I think it's also really great to just try to be really good at one thing if you can. But yeah, those are, I highly recommend defenders listening. If you are wanting to learn code, follow in Femke's footsteps, and definitely those three, honestly, like as a designer, I really don't know why you'd want to go much further than that. I mean, you can certainly, but it kind of starts to become one of those things where you just kind of become kind of good at front end when you're trying to do everything. So I think that's wonderful that you're doing that. And so that was one of my questions for you. I was curious as to why you're doing that. And your goal is certainly a good one to be able to program your designs. I think that's also one of the challenges in our field is we have these design visions and we spend so much time trying to get it right.
Totally.
And then it kind of things get lost in translation often when we hand our work over to somebody to develop it. Some of it's taste and some of it's just maybe just a lack of understanding of design principles. I think it's really empowering, truly empowering to be able to program your own design. So I commend you for that, Femke.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I mean, there's been so much discussion over, should designers learn how to code?
Right.
That's just a constant discussion. And I mean, my view on that has always been like, if you want to, nobody's really telling you what to do. If you want to learn to code, then go for it.
Right.
And for me personally, what made me finally take that step in learning it is I was experiencing roadblocks. Like I couldn't move forward in terms of I had designs and I wasn't able to build them. And so they would just live in a folder on my computer in a sketch file and never actually go on the web.
Never
and
see so the light that was of day.
Yeah, exactly. And so I had that need, like I reached that blockage point where I realized, okay, this is something that I need to learn so that I can do this myself and not just have to rely on other people to always do it for me.
Yeah. And I know your boyfriend is a developer, right? And so I'm sure he gets your designs perfect every time, right?
Yeah, he is a very, very busy person. So I think he maybe got a little bit tired of me nagging, asking if he could build things for me. So yeah, that was another motivator for me to just be able to take control and do it myself and not have to rely on him all the time.
Good for you. Good for you. So, yes, you know, this is a superhero theme, and I think it's a lot of fun. I'm a nerd, too. I've got a lot of comic books still, and I think there's a nice correlation, too, to this field. It's not that we're better. We're not better than anyone. It's just that we put a lot of work in and to build experience to try to help others. That's what superheroes do. They help others in need, and so that's the whole unction behind this show. And so I want to ask you, who's been the biggest superhero in your work and why?
Oh, such a big question.
It's hard to pick one, too.
It's really hard to pick one, and I'm not going to be able to pick one. Has anyone that you've interviewed been able to just say one person?
Yes, but reluctantly. It's like, I don't want to leave out all those other people, but it's like, if you had to pick one, who might that be?
Well, the first superhero, I guess, that influenced and encouraged me, not directly, but that I felt really encouraged by to pursue design was and is still a designer called Jessica Heesch.
Oh, yes.
And I'm not sure if you've heard of her. She's a very, very talented lettering artist. Mm-hmm. And I was just super motivated by her. I first discovered her a few years ago now, and everything about her is just, to me, so powerful, and I love what she stands for. She's done so much for the design community, especially for younger designers, and so she's always been someone that I've looked up to. And I actually last year got to speak at the same conference that she spoke at.
Ah, so
which
cool.
I was like, what? This is so crazy. It was such a crazy, crazy thing. But apart from her, I suppose, I mean, my work is really influenced by the people and things around me. And so I try to surround myself a lot with people that encourage me and people that push me to be my better self and people that sort of have that positive influence on me. And so all of my close friends, they really inspire me to do good and to do better work. I've got a really, really nice group of talented friends. A lot of them are also creatives, maybe they're designers or motion graphic artists, things like that. So it's nice, I think, to purposefully surround yourself with diverse friendships. So not all of my friends are designers. Some of them are accountants and, you know, other disciplines from different fields. But I think it's really nice to have that balance of people who are doing the same thing as you and people who aren't. And they can provide you with, I think, different outside perspectives that you can then bring into your work, which for me has been really valuable and really helps me keep an open mind.
I love that perspective, MK. It's, I've said this before on the show, but it's, you know, the inputs that we put in are is kind of the output that we're going to kind of bring out. And so I've been wanting to do a lot more exploration. I'm starting to with books and such. I'm a personal growth person like you. I'm a really big on it and a big proponent of it. But I feel like there's, and it's been said, you know, when you read the same books as everybody else, you're going to have the same ideas as everybody else, right?
Right.
So that's kind of a challenge and a reminder to me. So I thank you for that, to explore a lot of other creative inputs. And that has to do with the diversity factor as well. And I love what John Maeda is doing in our field and really being a voice for more diversity in design. And because it's going to make our designs better. It's going to make them more inclusive and more empathetic, right?
Totally. And I think we definitely need more of that.
Yes, fully agree. So as we know, and you know, as personal growth people, we know that growth only happens many times, often happens through failures. And failure is not a terrible thing. It's actually learning. And so I liked this part of the show because I know that we not only learn from our own failures greatly, but other people can also learn from ours as well. So I'd love to ask you, do you have a story of what's been the biggest one in your career?
Oh, the biggest failure. I'm not sure if I can pinpoint a specific moment where I felt like I failed, but in general, I feel like I struggle a lot with confidence. And I think a lot of us as creatives definitely struggle with that. And for me personally, that's definitely held me back from doing things, which I sort of see as a failure because I could have done that thing, but I didn't do it because I wasn't confident enough. I think you know, I'm always having those moments where I'm doubting myself and thinking, it's that imposter syndrome feeling, right?
Oh, yes.
Like, am I good enough to do this? Surely there's someone else that's like way better than me. They can do this so much better. Why is this person interested in me? Why would I be good at doing this? And a lot of times that stopped me from taking action on something, which when I look back on it is, you know, that's a real shame, I think, because that's a missed opportunity or a missed potential that I could have had or experienced. And so that's something that I still struggle with, is that lack of confidence. And I guess going forward, I have to watch that a little bit and make sure that that doesn't lead to a really big failure, because I think it's easy to let those negative feelings really hold you back from things. And so, yeah, I'm trying to get better at keeping an open mind and recognizing when I'm in a situation where I'm feeling like confidence is holding me back and making sure that it doesn't. But it's easier said than done.
It certainly is. And I appreciate your vulnerability in sharing that, Femke. It's, and I'm so glad that that this topic has become a lot more public in conversations because, you know, especially early on, and I can speak just from this field, because I remember the web when it was just America Online, and my first website was in their personal publisher. And I feel like, you know, as the web blew up right around 2000 or, not, you know, 90, late 90s, and we started recovering after 2000. It just seemed like everybody on the web that like wanted to have their own business, like it came across so corporate and impersonal, right? And just kind of stale and cold. And it's like one person, but it looks like it's a corporation, right, on the website. And even the language and all the copy and everything. And it just, it feels like, why are we hiding from who we are? And I'm so glad that that the web and communication in general has taken a really good turn. And this topic has become a lot more main place and commonplace. And we need to admit that as creative people, that we all have imposter syndrome. We're all just kind of making it up as we go along, and that's okay.
Totally,
I think that's where the confidence comes from, is getting out there, stepping in. And here's a quote from somebody named Femke that I heard in this in your talk, in your great talk. He said, "You can achieve anything in life you want. You just need to take action in order to achieve it." Mm-hmm. I love that. And it totally explains it. It totally, for me, it explains how you kind of get through. You never get over imposter syndrome, I don't think, because there's always that nagging voice. You can drown it out. But I think that the easier, and defenders listening who are struggling with this as well, I think that what I've learned is the easiest way to drown out that voice is to, like Femke suggests, take action, step out of your comfort zone, take action, and get those little wins. Those little wins are what bring you that confidence to drown out that stinker, that voice in your head, right?
Yeah. I mean, just do something about it, right?
Yes.
Because nothing's going to happen if you just sit there and let it consume you. You know, you're not going to be able to move forward. You're not going to be able to improve yourself or overcome those feelings, because you're just sitting there feeling, you know, crappy about yourself. Mm. And so I really do believe that, you know, you really do have to take action, and that's all you have to do. It's just one small step, and taking action can look different for different people. It doesn't have to be this huge thing. Like, you don't have to, I don't know, say yes to a job or speak on stage at a giant conference. Like, taking action could be something as small as publishing something to your Instagram page or doing a sketch in your notebook or something like that. You know, it could be anything. It doesn't have to be this huge, overwhelming step that you take. It can be these small baby steps that you take towards a greater goal.
I love it. And speaking of growth and personal growth, and I know that's really been a big driver for you and everything you do, and everything you share to help others. I just want to ask you, because I mean, you just turned 25 recently, and I know you've been at this
a couple months ago.
And happy belated birthday.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I wanted to say that I know you've been at this for a while too. And when I was your age, Femke, I was going and buying drugs from a guy that was showing me his gun if I didn't pay him. And I'm serious. And I was like not sleeping at night, and I was waking up, and I was not waking up. I was not sleeping at night, and I was waiting at the liquor store to open at 6 a.m. to help me with my come down. That's what I was doing around your age. What in the world, like how, You inspire me, Femke.
Thank you.
Yeah, what makes you? And I thank God I got through that period of time. I thank God literally for that. But what makes you want to be the best you can be, and to like, what makes you so inspired to be in personal growth and help others? Like, what's the correlation with being a better person and being a better designer?
Oh, that's so funny, because even though I'm 25 and to a lot of people I'm pretty young, I look at 19-year-olds who are doing way more than I'm doing. Mm. And I'm sitting here thinking, oh my gosh, I'm so old, or like, I'm so late to the game and I should have started this years ago. You know, so it's just funny that age has that effect on you when really it doesn't matter. It doesn't really mean anything at all. But to answer your question, I guess, I don't know. I think a couple of years ago, I realized that I could just be a consumer and just consume the world's content and sit back and read all this stuff and not really do anything about it. And I realized that wasn't who I wanted to be. You know, I wanted to give back. I wanted to use what I have learned or am learning or experiencing and be able to use that to help others. And so, since I sort of made that realization, I guess, a couple of years ago, I really started giving back and teaching and sharing what I know for others. And that's just been hugely awesome, I guess, and also really helpful, not just for others who have learned from me, but also I'm learning so much myself as well from other people and also about myself.
I love that. Yeah, and I like how you mentioned too on starting the podcast, because that was one of my questions too, is, you know, what inspired you to do that? And I think if a year and a half ago, you probably couldn't have answered that in the same way as you can now, I would venture, because you kind of answered it a little bit, is that you've learned so much from other people from doing this. And I concur with you. I can't believe what I've learned in just a year and a half, and the people like yourself who've carved out, you know, an hour plus of their time to have this conversation and to help others. So there's so many, and I can't tell you, and I bet you identify with this. In fact, I've seen some of the comments on your YouTube and such of how many people are being helped just by listening in, by being able to listen in on someone who's just a little further along, perhaps, on their journey, and someone who has a heart like you to give back to the community. So I guess I just wanted to kind of touch on that, because it really, truly has been a wonderful journey having a podcast and having great conversations like this.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. When I started the podcast with Charlie, we really had no idea, like, would anyone listen to this? Is anyone going to find this helpful? I mean, when we started, the sort of motivator behind starting was, you know, first of all, to help others. But we sort of realized that we were having these chats already between the two of us. And we would just talk for hours on end about topics like what we talk about on the show. And we sort of realized, like, why don't we record this? And maybe by doing that, we can help others. And I think at the time, we were also both sort of looking for a new side project and something to sort of be consistent on. And I like doing the show with her because it gives each of us accountability, you know, to show up each week, having that other person there that's going to be there. You know, it gives you that extra motivator, I suppose, to show up. And yeah, the show has just grown so much. It's just been super cool to grow this audience. And also it's interesting to see the diversity of our audience. We do get a lot of design students, but we also get a lot of like industry people as well, people who have been in the field for years, sometimes like more than 15, 20 years. So it's awesome to be able to also help those people and not just the, you know, up and coming designers.
Totally. And your writing is really exploding out there. And that's how I found you, Femke, was through, and I would venture that your most viral post has been the one about how we need more crappy design. And you use a different word, but it's a family show, so I'll just say crappy.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Yeah. I'm sure, leave it up to people's imagination what that word is supposed to be.
Yes. Can you talk about that? Because that's the one, is that probably your most viral one so far?
Yes, and it was completely unexpected.
It was so good and so honest and necessary.
Well, yeah, I Okay, it's so funny because the post is about how we need more crappy work. And what motivated or encouraged that post for me was I was just getting really, really tired of Dribbble, which is a website for those listening that might not know. It's a website where designers can post shots of their work, so little like snapshots. And a lot of it is just very shallow. It looks really pretty, but it's often like not actually functional, or they've missed a core part of the user experience. And so when you really dig deeper, it doesn't really make sense. Or maybe it's just like a tiny crop of something, and so it's therefore lacking context. And I was just getting really, really tired of these over-polished, high-finesse designs that people were publishing. And as a designer myself, I know that there's so much value in the process of design and in all of the other ideas. You know, often what we see that gets put into final, there was like 100 other ideas that were explored before they got to their last idea. And
I just said that on the show recently. I just said the same exact thing. Yes. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's so funny. No, but I was just like, we need more of that work, because that's the work that for me, I get encouraged by and I get inspired by, is seeing people's design iterations and how they got from A to B. I personally get a lot more value and learnings from seeing that than just seeing a, you know, screenshot of a high fidelity design. But in regards to the post itself, it's so funny because I wrote it, and after finishing it, I sat back in my chair and I thought to myself, this is such a crappy post. No one is going to read this. I thought, this is like the crappiest piece of writing I've ever done.
Oh,
I honestly felt like this is like, I just felt like it was me venting my feelings and frustrations about Dribbble, and that people were going to, you know, just think, oh, whatever. But I have a consistent publishing schedule, and so I stayed to my commitment, and Thursday morning I published it, and I was like, whatever, no one's going to read this, it's so crappy. Well, quite the opposite happened,
yes,
actually.
Yes, it did.
Yeah. It was really crazy. I think it got published on Designer News and then on Reddit, and then it got included in some pretty big newsletters, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And
All over Twitter too. That's how I found it.
A
few people I think I followed had retweeted it, I think.
Yeah, I got a lot of tweets that day, and also some pretty prominent industry people subscribed to my mailing list reading that post, which is super cool, but also I was freaking out.
kind of humbling, isn't it?
It is very humbling, yeah. I have not yet checked to see if they're still subscribed, and it freaks me out every week thinking that that person could be reading this. But it was a very cool experience, I guess, to have a post, you know, be so widely received, I suppose. I think out of all the comments that I got from it, I only got one negative comment about the post. Everybody else totally resonated with it. So that was quite cool.
What was the negative post?
The negative post.
Isn't it funny how those stand out more than all of the other ones?
Yeah, I know. And it's funny that I can remember exactly what it said.
Oh.
And I can't remember exactly what all the positive things said.
Yeah.
But it said something like, oh, yeah, these designers, they need to stop preaching to the choir and start actually doing what they're preaching and making a change. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, I am. I'm trying so hard.
You just did.
If you go to my Dribbble page, there's like literally a photo from my sketchbook in there. Mm. There's like design iterations. There's really quite low level stuff on there. Mm. And here was this person saying that, oh, all she publishes is high fidelity designs. So,
oh, please.
What can she say?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
That's okay. It's, you know, and that's the thing. Like, I think it's sort of a validation, and that's kind of, it's mindset when you look at, you know, mm-hmm. and I know you've read up a lot on mindset too, and it's really how you look at it. I got my first one star review recently, and it wasn't even a review. It was just somebody just click the one star button. They didn't even bother to tell me why. But it's just funny. It's, you know, and that's the thing. It's like, look at that as like a validation that you're doing the work that you need to do. And that's how I view that as well is, and you're reaching more people, right? It's like Facebook, yeah. Like they do a lot of really good things, but the things that they mess up on are really a big deal. They become a really big deal because there's so many people that are impacted by it.
Yeah, right? Totally.
So that's, you just kind of look at it like that. Yeah.
Yeah, it just comes with it. It's the same, like, every week people unsubscribe from my mailing list and, mm-hmm. you know, I don't take it personally. That's just life. You know, you can't please everyone all the time. So, you know, there's going to be times when people are going to disagree with me or not appreciate what I have to share. And that's fine. I think mm-hmm. also people grow themselves. And so those who subscribe to my mailing list, over time, they're going to grow personally. And so mm-hmm. after a while, they might not need my advice and help anymore. And so naturally, they can unsubscribe. That's fine.
Yeah. And I appreciate you saying that, Femke. It's, I feel the same way. I used to be really protective of my email subscribe count. And then, you know, it went up and, you know, started getting past 500. It's like 550. And then it, and then what I realized is that there's a large percentage of those people that haven't been opening my newsletters for like 2 months.
Right.
Or plus, like the last five newsletters, and I send newsletters biweekly, so it's probably been longer. It might be in the last quarter. There's a third of the people on my list, or maybe not that many, but it seemed like there was like 100 some odd people that just weren't opening the newsletters. And I realized, mm-hmm. Numbers don't matter. Like, if you had five people on your mailing list that really love what you're saying and love what you're writing about, and those five people are just thrilled about it and telling other people, like, that to me, like, I think that's the point, is you're reaching the people that want to be reached by what you're sharing. And I don't take it personally either anymore. In fact, I probably too hastily, but I actually removed those people from my mailing list.
Yeah, I have a friend who does the same. She removes them as well because, well, first of all, they drag your stats down, right?
Yes, so, exactly. I got a 60% open rate after that.
Wow. Yeah. See, that looks way better. So, yeah, I don't take it personally when people unsubscribe. I think, you know, you never know what's going on in that person's life too, right?
Yeah.
They could be dealing with something. Sure. Maybe they've changed professions. Like, you just don't know. And so it's something that I really do not take personally.
Yeah. Yeah, I concur. I appreciate you sharing that. And I want to, you know, back to the crappy work article, I want to say one more thing, maybe a couple more things about it. I think obviously it resonated, and I think when you're putting stuff out in the world, the stuff that resonates the most, there's something there, right? And to me, it's like, wow, there's this felt need that you're not the only one. Like when you were like hovering over the send button, like the MailChimp monkey finger, hovering over, like sweating, like, oh, should I do this? You know, and when you did it, you found an audience and you found me. I that's how I found you. And basically, like, you're saying something that's resonating. Okay. So there's something there, and I think that there's something to be said for that. Like, we do need to show more of our process. We do need to mm-hmm. to show the down and dirty, the sketches, and like, I'm really bad at that. I have a major imposter syndrome when it comes to my sketches, my drawing. It's an atrophied muscle, to be quite honest. But I think it helps because it shows, you know, the trajectory of growth and how you got there. So I appreciate it, and I wanted to tell you too. There's a quote from my favorite fellow Kiwi, I think yours too, maybe, Derek Sivers.
And
I love this quote, and I put it out there all the time on Twitter. He said this in one of his videos. He said, "We'd be doing the world a huge favor if we showed it our mistakes and sweaty working process more than our polished, finished product."
I love it.
Isn't
I think
that
that's
great?
So true. I need to fly home and personally thank him.
You should. I saw that on your website. I was like, yes, I love Derek. He's so awesome.
Yeah, I haven't met him, but I'm pretty sure we live in the same town, actually.
No way.
I should try and hit him up next time I'm there.
He's so friendly on email. He answers every single email, and he's really like, every time I put a tweet out there and I mention him, he's like, always thanks me for it. Yeah, he's
a
super
nice
guy.
What a Kiwi.
Yes, there we go.
So. Yeah, but I think that's super true, though. I think there's so much hidden gems, I suppose, in the process and in the mistakes that we often keep hidden because we're ashamed of it. Yeah. We want to show off the final fancy thing because it makes us look cool or professional or really experienced. But I mean, obviously those things do have to eventually be shared. If you're designing a website, that website is eventually going to go live, so the world will eventually see it. But I just think it's a shame that we hold so much of the process back. And so, yeah, I love what Derek said. I should email him and tell him how awesome he is.
Totally do it. Totally. Yeah, he'll respond. He responds to every email. He gets like a thousand emails a day or something. It's crazy.
What a guy.
Yeah.
Design at the speed of thought with Adobe XD, the first all-in-one UX UI solution for creating beautiful, interactive user experiences for websites and desktop or mobile apps. Adobe XD helps you design, prototype, and even share your experiences with your teammates and stakeholders for feedback. Try the free beta for Mac or Windows today. Go to userdefenders.com/XD to learn more.
So, you know, have you ever read, this is kind of related, but have you ever read Bruce Mau's Incomplete Manifesto for Growth?
No, but it sounds like something I would be totally interested in reading.
Oh my gosh. This is so good.
Is it good?
And not enough creative people know about this. He's an ad guy from like the 60s or 70s. He's one of those Mad Men guys, I guess. Maybe not that era, but like a little after. He's one of the ad guys. Super creative guy. He wrote something, and there's like 43 points to this thing, and it is so good. It's so inspiring. I want to read 2 points that he mentions in this. This is written, again, mind you, probably 40 some odd years ago.
Okay.
And two of the points that he makes totally correlate with your article on how we need more crappy design. And two of the points, one is begin anywhere, and the other is play, right? So he says in number nine, he says, begin anywhere. John Cage tells us that not knowing where to begin is a common form of paralysis. His advice, begin anywhere. And then the other one was about play. And it's the last one that he's actually wrote on here. It says, power to the people. Play can only happen when people feel they have control over their lives. We can't be free agents if we're not free. So it's so good. You got to read this whole thing.
My mind is like imploding.
Oh
yeah,
my gosh.
I really need to read that.
There's 41 other points in here that are incredibly inspiring. But yeah, I'll send you the link after this talk and we'll be sure to post it on the show notes as well. But anyway, it just made me think of that. It's like, we just need to be just more open with our process. We're not magicians. We're not unicorns.
Nope.
We're people. We're people struggling to make a difference.
Yeah. And we make mistakes.
Yes.
All of us do. And so I think we need to be more open about that.
Amen. So Femke, what's your design superpower? I mean, we've learned a few things about your design superpower, and I know you've got quite a few. So what would you say is yours?
Oh,
if you had to narrow it down.
So yeah, I would say, I mean, a lot of people don't know this, but I actually have a degree in marketing. So I would say that marketing is one of my design superpowers, which probably to a lot of people listening are like, what? That's so weird. But for me, having this really good, thorough knowledge and understanding of marketing has been hugely helpful for me when I'm designing. It gives me different perspectives, I think. I can look at something from a design perspective and then also from a marketing perspective, which I think when you put those two things together is quite powerful.
Absolutely.
Because a lot of the time, I think as designers, we don't like to admit this, but a lot of the time, design is about selling. Like, you're selling something or you're trying to convince the user to do something. And so marketing a lot of the time comes into that and plays a big role in that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I would have to say that's probably my biggest superpower at the moment is my background in marketing and being able to include that in my design process.
That's a great superpower, Femke, and it totally correlates with design. You're right. We are ultimately, especially when we're being paid to design a solution, to solve a problem, we do need to understand how people work and how to get a message out there to people. And
yeah.
So I mean, I think that's a great
one. Many other factors to think about, like who is using this?
Mm-hmm.
When are they using this? In what context are they using this? Why are they using this? You know, a lot of that plays into marketing as well. Like, who is the person? What's their intrinsic, like, buying behavior or purchasing behavior, things like that, that I think feed a lot into design as well. So,
Fully agree.
It's quite cool to be able to bring that perspective to the table as well when I'm designing.
I love it. And a close relative to marketing, especially based on what you just said, is psychology. I feel like, and I've been so inspired. I had a conversation with Joe Leach recently, and he's got a ton of background in psychology, and he's really out there evangelizing the correlation of psychology and design. And there's it's a close relative, I think. The marketing and psychology, they're very, very close relatives. So that's something I'm really getting more and more inspired to kind of dive into. And maybe that'll be one of my different inputs that I was talking about earlier. Start, right, getting some different inputs on that and learning how people work more. I love that.
Yeah. I've read quite a few marketing books that have really helped me with design as well. At the time that I read them, I wasn't pursuing design. I was still in my marketing degree. But now that I'm a designer, I think back to what I learned in those books and feel like I can really pull that into my designs as well. And one of those books that, seen as we are recommending books on this episode, one of the books that I would recommend is a book called Start With Why by Simon Sinek.
Oh, yes.
Oh, it's the most amazing
Simon.
Book. Yeah.
My favorite author. Him, he is one of my favorites. He really is.
Yeah, he's amazing. So I read that years ago, like when I was still studying, and it's very much a book about marketing, but so much of that I can apply to my design as well. So I just recommend, if you're a designer listening, definitely give that book a read.
Oh, love that recommendation. I'm going to second that. Defenders, check out
Start
With Why.
I need to reread it, actually. It was probably about 6 years ago I read it, so I really should reread. I'm going to add it to my reading list, too.
There you go. Are you how do you read your books? Paper books, digital or Audible?
Yeah. Okay, so I used to read on my iPad, but for Christmas I got given a Kindle.
Ah.
So I have recently switched to reading on Kindle, which I didn't think I would like. I was like, oh, the iPad's fine. You know, it's like, I love my iPad. It's amazing.
Yes.
But oh my gosh, the Kindle is so much better for reading. So yeah.
Is it? Why?
Why did you ask?
Why? Yeah. Why is it better?
For me, it's better because there's no other distractions. Like there's no apps or I'm just going to watch this thing on YouTube or notifications like my mum is texting me or something.
Brilliant.
And also what I like about the Kindle is you can, like the brightness is a lot more adjustable. And so it's, for me, it's better on my eyes if I'm reading at nighttime.
That's cool. Well, you kind of sold me on that. I'm an iPad guy. I read all my books on my iPad.
I was you 6 months ago.
My goodness. I think I'm missing out. I have FOMO right now.
Well, there's one thing I miss about reading on the iPad, and that is the ability to invert the colors. So like, I always read with the screen black and the text white.
Me too.
Really?
Yep, that's so funny. I did the same thing.
Nobody else does that. Every time I would do it, people would look at me like, how can you read that?
Oh, it's so much better, especially at night when you're trying to get ready your circadian rhythm ready.
Yeah, totally. Especially at night. So that is one thing that I kind of miss on the Kindle. And it was the first question I asked my boyfriend when he got it for me. I was like, can I make it black? Can I make the screen black? And he was like, no, why would you want to do that?
So,
but the rest
you,
of
sister.
It is a good experience.
Yeah, no, that's cool. And don't you get free books from Amazon, like free rental books?
Yeah, I haven't tried that.
Oh,
but
man,
you can.
That's cool.
I'm pretty sure.
I think Amazon should sponsor this episode.
Yeah. Make sure you're putting all affiliate links into the show notes, right?
Yeah. You know what stinks? I live in Colorado. I'm one of the only states that Amazon doesn't let you do affiliates.
What?
It stinks.
That sucks.
I know. It really does. Oh, well. Amazon, come on.
Beautiful state, though, by the way.
Oh, thank you. We love it. Not quite as beautiful as Lord of the Rings country, I would venture.
Yeah, it is quite nice.
But I've never been there. I've only seen the movies.
Well, you've seen half of it then.
Yeah, right. I'm sure there's so much more that Peter Jackson couldn't capture. But yeah, it is. I love it here. It's so nice. And it took me a year to adjust to the altitude. I felt like I was going to die after shoveling the snow the first time. I literally thought I was going to have a heart attack after 5 minutes of shoveling snow. But I also, that was before my personal growth journey and before my daily exercise regimen. So anyway, yeah, I love it here.
Hi, I'm Drew Lett. I'm the user experience designer and co-founder of Timecat, and I fight for the users. You're listening to User Defenders Podcast with Jason Ogle.
I'd like to ask you, Femke, adversely, what's your design kryptonite?
Oh, my design kryptonite. Okay, this is probably not going to come as a surprise, considering we just talked about this recently.
Okay.
But my design kryptonite is dribble.
Okay. Fair enough.
In terms of, it's almost like a drug. Like, yeah. I want to go on there and see what the cool stuff is, but at the same time, I'm like, no, I don't want to be too influenced and get so caught up in that game of just showing shallow work, I suppose.
Yeah.
And so for me, that's hard still, because there are some really, really talented designers on there and really amazing work that gets showed on there, but it's just too much glossy for me.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to consume it less. It's like mm-hmm. Facebook, you know, you have such a habit. You don't want to be on there, but you end up on there anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know how you got there. And 10 minutes later, you're still there and you're like, why am I here? it's like that for me a little bit. So it is to me my kryptonite, because I love it, but I hate it at the same time.
Sure. No, I totally understand your sentiment there. And I don't, it's not Dan Cederholm's fault. He started Dribble and he started it with the intention that you mentioned in your article to show the process.
Yeah.
Like, don't just wait till the very end when it's polished after 30 hours of work, 40 hours of work, mm-hmm. whatever, like show where you're at in the process to like let other people be inspired by the process, not so much by the finished work. So I totally get that. I agree with you.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it was created to be a work in progress site, and it's just not anymore. And I mean, that's not necessarily good or bad, but for me personally, I don't really enjoy that as much. So yeah, it's like a drug, though.
Yep.
I try to stay off it.
There's some really interesting stuff. I mean, there's certainly a lot of creativity on there, but it can be discouraging for sure, especially when you're just like we were talking about earlier, just trying to get through the imposter syndrome, trying to kind of get those little wins. And then you go look at something on Dribble, you're like, oh my God, I'm never going to get
there. Yeah, that's the worst. It's the worst when you're totally in that low dipping point and you go on Dribble and it just makes you feel so much worse.
Yeah. Well, they were procured recently by somebody, an investor who's been following Dan's work and for a while. I'm really curious. I'm interested to see what this person and organization does with it. I hope maybe if you're listening, person, I can't remember your name. If you're listening, maybe that's something to take into consideration. Now, certainly these are tools and we can't control the way people use the tools we create, right? I mean, there's the user UX, but can we really design the experience is the question. And, you know, people are going to do what they want. You can have the best intentions in mind, the best resources, the best data in the world, and the best design team in the world, and people are still going to use your products however they want, right?
Yeah, that's so true.
That's just kind of one of those things.
Yeah.
Let's start wrapping up the show with the imparting of superpowers. You've already imparted a lot of superpower, but I know there's more in there. I'm going to dig out of you, okay?
Okay.
What's one habit that you believe contributes to your success?
Getting up early.
Thank you.
Is this supposed to be quick fire? Because I can expand.
No, please, please. I love that you said that. And please expound.
Yeah, so I get up reasonably early. I, every morning, spend about 2 hours on side projects before I log into my day job. And through that whole sort of morning routine, I've created this habitual ritual. Wow, that.
Hey,
I didn't mean
nice.
For that to rhyme, but it's very, very structured. So I'll start the night before. So the night before, I purposefully set my alarm for 6 a.m. I do this every night, and I purposefully don't set it to be an automatic recurring alarm. I purposefully set it myself, because for me, before I go to sleep, that's like a mental note or a mental reminder to me of like, okay, I'm making this commitment to get up early tomorrow. And I do. The next morning I get up, I have a glass of cold chocolate milk, which is like my tiny little guilty pleasure. and I learned, it's another book actually, I think it's called The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg,
yes. Charles Duhigg.
And in that book, he talks about creating habits, obviously, and about like small rewards throughout.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, the chocolate milk is my small reward because I got up early.
Nice.
And then I take a shower and whatever, and yeah, start on my side projects. And that has just been so great for me to be able to have this 2 hours in the morning, totally uninterrupted focus time. Everyone else is pretty much asleep. I mean, this is Europe. People don't wake up till 10 a.m. I just get this me time where it's just me and I can work on whatever I want to do, whether that's freelancing stuff or work on the podcast or write an article or something like that. And I think if I didn't purposefully make that time for myself, I would just be one of those people that complain about never having time for things, and then I would never do anything because I would just be too tired or too exhausted at the end of the day. So having that habit in the morning has been hugely beneficial for me and my ability to do more outside of my day job.
I love that answer, Femke. And I have said this before, and I'll say it again and again, that my morning routine has literally changed my life in every way. And I'm not fluffing that. That's not fluff. That is absolute gospel truth. Like I said before, I've got quite a sordid past. I've come a long way, thank God. And I tell you that I was completely out of shape. I was probably 50 pounds overweight. I almost had a heart attack shoveling my driveway in Colorado. And, you know, I mean, all these things. And then I started listening to podcasts, and I will attribute this to listening to podcasts. I started listening to podcasts, and I started learning about the benefits of a morning routine. That's what got my morning journey started, my morning routine and my personal growth journey. But it's been life-changing to me. And I want to tell you that you wrote an article called Why I Wake Up Early. And it's inspiring to me. And I will tell you, I've been doing the morning routine for almost 2 years now, but reading your article helped me reorganize my morning routine and to where I start my day. I wake up at 5. I start my day doing work, doing like knocking out some goals. And I was like, this is why my to-do is, I'm like 5 points on my to-do-ist now. You know how you get karma points every time you complete a goal? Yeah. I'm like 5 points. And like, what happened? Like when I started doing this, I was at like 500 or something. But anyway, I realized it's because I never had time and I never made the time. I think that's the thing. It's like, it's not that we don't have time. We don't make the time to do the important things. And I loved your episode too, the other day, just your most recent one about procrastinating. You know, it's like, yes, this is it. We work on the things we want to work on, not on the things we really should be working on. And so what you've done, and I wanted to tell you, you inspired me to reorganize my morning routine, and I'm knocking stuff out and I'm only spending a half an hour. I'm only spending 30 minutes in my morning before I get on the treadmill. I go on the treadmill right after that, but I'm only spending 30 minutes and I'm knocking stuff out and it feels great. It's a great win for the day. And you know, you get the nice little dopamine hit, the safe one, not the ones that I used to do. You know, you get the safe and healthy dopamine.
Good
hits.
To clarify.
I need to clarify that. I live in Colorado, you know. Amsterdam.
No, I live in Amsterdam.
I know. I was going to say Amsterdam, like that's where you live. That was, everybody always talked about that. Oh man, you could smoke in the cafes. And now it's like, that's like old hat now. And everybody's moving to Colorado now because of this. So. Anyway, I just love that you shared that and you inspire me. And I want to thank you for that. I'm actually getting some crap done now because of just reading your article and applying that just taking action thing.
Oh, thank you. That's so awesome. And like, good for you.
Thank you.
It's really hard to make that mind shift, I guess, and be able to develop that mindset is really hard for a lot of people. And it does come down to realizing that you're in control and that you're never going to be gifted more time. I hear so many people complaining, I just don't have enough time, or there's not enough hours in the day, or whatever excuse. And I mean, it's totally in your control. You have to make time.
Yes.
The only way you're ever going to get more time or be given more time is if you take action and make it.
Mm.
And so I think it's awesome that you're doing that in the morning. So kudos to you and well done.
Thank you. Appreciate that. So how do you stay inspired? I know that inspiration is huge for you and for Charlie, and that's why you do the show, and to also, and that's why I do this show. It's funny. I mean, there's a lot of parallels between what we're doing and reaching our audiences. And I think inspiration is kind of at the core of it. How do you stay inspired, Femke?
Well, we have an episode on Design Life about how we find inspiration.
I'm glad you asked.
But also, I mean, the podcast for me is really inspiring. Getting to talk to to Charlie every week for an hour is, I mean, she inspires me. Mm. She knows that. I find her super inspiring. And so it's super cool to be able to talk to her every week for an hour. And we're really close friends too. So we text a lot. And I'm also part of a mastermind group. So
nice.
The people in there are really inspiring for me, and they're people that I can trust and go to, and they'll provide help or inspiration for me if I need it. And I think probably like the biggest thing for me is just making sure that I am in touch with other parts of my life outside of design.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to just become some robot or some person that's only influenced by things within the creative world or within design.
Mm-hmm.
So I make sure that I am always keeping my eyes open for being inspired by other things. And I try and do that by traveling. So we travel quite a lot, or just I go for lots of bike rides. Again, I live in Amsterdam.
Oh, yes.
So I do that quite a lot. And just keeping connected with people outside of my industry as well. I mean, obviously there's things inside my industry that do inspire me, but it's also really important for me to make sure that I'm also being inspired outside of it, because I think there's a lot of stuff out there that we can bring in to, well, for me, to the design industry, and I can bring that into my work. And to me, that's important.
I love it. What's your most invincible resource or tool you can recommend to our listeners?
I'm going to be biased here and say Atomic, because I work there.
Nice.
And it's a design tool. And
nice.
I mean, honestly, I use it every day. And so That for me is a really powerful prototyping tool. I use it for work, obviously. I work there, mm-hmm. but I also use it for personal stuff as well. For my freelance projects, I use Atomic quite a lot for just getting my ideas out there and just exploring and testing to see if something feels right before really committing to design. I think quite often we really rush in as designers. You know, we get this idea and we quickly rush in and try and make it become a reality. And then we realize too late in the process that, oh, maybe we missed something, or it wasn't quite the right idea, or something could have been done better. So I like to use Atomic for that too, to just kind of test my early stage ideas and see whether they're feeling right before I actually commit to them in a design tool like Sketch.
Very cool. So you mean you are the user?
In terms of prototyping?
You use the tool that you design. So you are the user.
Yeah.
Right?
Basically, I suppose it's kind of meta. I didn't really think about it that way.
Eat your heart out, Jacob Nielsen.
Yes, so true. Yeah, funny, isn't it? That it's like what goes around comes back around, right?
Yes.
Like, I mean, we all end up using and eating, like software is eating the world, right? We're all using and eating each other's software. And it's the same with, you know, if you're a designer, especially like in the tech industry, and if you're working at a big place like Facebook, obviously, then you're using that every day in your personal life too. So yeah, it's weird though. It's very strange.
Yeah, that's cool though. I mean, we were just having this conversation at work yesterday about creativity. You can't stop it, right? I mean, you cannot stop creativity, and all creative people need, all we need are tools, the right tools to get our ideas out into the world, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's no off switch when it comes to being a creative person. And inspiration could strike like literally at any moment.
Yes.
Which is sometimes unexpected, but a nice surprise, I suppose.
I definitely agree. So this is my last question for you, Femke, and this is one of my favorites. And I know that a lot of the defenders listening really love this answer from my super guests, because it's a lot of them are starting to get their hands dirty in the field, or they're just kind of diving in. And so I want to ask you, especially from your perspective, as far as being a freelancer and a podcaster, a designer, and just all the things you're doing, a writer, you know, what's your best advice for the defenders listening who are maybe freelancing or working on a side project or just maybe lacking inspiration?
I feel like I have such responsibility to answer so well. But I think my best piece of advice would be what we've sort of already talked about, which is just take that one tiny step towards your goal that you need to take.
Mm.
I think often we have these, you know, big, ambitious goals, which I think is awesome. I'm all for big goals. I think it's really, really cool to have these big goals and have something to strive for and achieve that feels out of reach, that kind of, you know, keeps you motivated to keep going and keep trying to grab it. But at the same time, those big goals can really overwhelm us and freak us out and cause us to worry and feel like we're never going to get there. And I think my one piece of advice for that would be to just start small and just whatever one small thing that you can do today to help get you closer to it, just do it. Like, just take that one small step, I suppose. And instead of looking at this goal as this one big thing to achieve, just break it down. Break it down into small bite-sized chunks that you can slowly chip away at over time. And I think by doing that, you'll slowly start to get closer and closer, and you'll probably gain a bit of momentum as well, like a snowball effect. You know, once you start, you'll learn things along the way, you'll get better at it, and so you can then make better, more informed decisions, etc. And so, yeah, just start small, and I think it will get easier over time. Just keep focused and keep motivated and just keep working towards that goal, whatever that step may be. Maybe something small, maybe something really big, but just keep going because you can do this.
I just want to sit in this moment for a second.
Hope that's not too heavy for the people listening.
That was so good. Such great advice. Defenders, I'm sure they're like, if they're driving, they're probably like lifting their arms. Keep your hands on the wheel. Keep your hands on the wheel. No, that was so good. Yeah. Such great advice, Femke.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, just like, you know, what's that one small step that you can take today to make a better tomorrow, you know? Mm. It can just be something as tiny as you like, just as long as you're moving forward.
There's so many tweetables in this interview. There was one right there. So as we close, and reluctantly, I could talk, you know, another hour with you plus. But as we close, why don't you tell our audience the best way to connect and to keep up with you?
Oh, yeah. So the best way to keep up with what I'm doing or chat to me is probably on Twitter. So you can follow me on Twitter at FemkeSVS. And my name is spelled FemkeSVS. That's my handle. And from there, you can find basically everything else. And I also have a website, which is femke.co.nz. And on there, you can subscribe to my newsletter. And I send out every Thursday an article that is a bit uplifting, you know, giving you a bit of extra encouragement and motivation to achieve your goals. So yeah, that's where you can find me.
Defenders, get on the mailing list. Get on her mailing list. It is. I'm a subscriber, and you know, after, like I said, I read the article, I was like, I need this every week. Mm-hmm. I need what you're feeling led to share, and I've learned so much, and I continue to. So,
Thank you. Please
continue to do what you're doing, Femke. Please continue. You're inspiring. You inspire me. I know that you've inspired all of our defenders listening, and beyond. Just keep doing what you're doing. Keep writing, keep sharing what you know. And I just want to say, fight on, my friend.
Thank you.
How about that interview with Femke? I've been getting so much out of her weekly newsletters. I do recommend, after you join the Bi-Weekly Bugle, of course, to get on her email list. She is such a great writer and really gets to the heart of many design and personal growth issues with a lot of passion and a lot of heart. In fact, as I mentioned in the interview, it was her Why I Wake Up Early article that inspired me to change my morning routine up, and I'm actually getting a lot more done every day. So thanks, Femke. After I discovered her writing and listened to her podcast, I just couldn't wait to get her on the show. I know you'll be seeing a lot more of Femke. Speaking of newsletters, I want to direct your attention to the Bi-Weekly Bugle. If you're not on it already, Defender, would you please get on the list? It's a great way for me to engage with you on a more personal level, and you can kind of get a little bit more into my life as well, and kind of things going on with the show, and get little sneak peeks. And, you know, I like to consult the list for a lot of things, decisions that I'm going to make too. So it's just a great way to kind of be an insider, so to speak. So I'd love to have you on there. It's userdefenders.com/join. Thanks in advance. I look forward to connecting with you on a more personal level. I want to thank Adobe for sponsoring this episode. I also want to thank Chris Combs for the extraordinary editing, Eli Jorgensen for the astonishing artwork, and Darren Goldsmith for the sensational show notes. In 2 weeks, I have an interview with author of Psychology for Designers, Joe Leach. You will not want to miss this one, Defenders. You don't miss any, right? Thanks so much for listening, and until next time, fight on, my friends.